And there's tyranny all over the place, man. The censorship is getting thicker and thicker and thicker. I don't know if you people heard, I did a show with Jan Lamprecht last night, and Monica Schaefer's books were confiscated because she was at last weekend's Fash Bash, and when she went home, they confiscated Jan's book that he had given to her. They confiscated two of my books that she got from me, and two other books as well. So they did detain her for 3 hours, but let her go. So who knows if she'll ever get the books. I sent her a copy of the PDF of The Great Impersonation so she can read it while she's waiting for the actual book to be returned to her, if it ever is, all right?
It was so, in the chat room in the wee hours of the morning, I noticed somebody said there's another synagogue shooting in California.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so, I haven't found the feed on it because I've been recording songs to put in the archives for music tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Been very busy with that, but I'll research that. We'll get all of that information and probably run it over on Fake News Now this week.
Yeah,
because it's more than likely a false flag.
Oh, for sure.
I'm just very, very skeptical of anything, first of all, that comes out of California and anything concerning synagogues.
Right, right.
But I want to thank Matt for another $150 donation to the Prisoner Bible Fund. I just opened the envelope today, and we've got quite a bit of cash.
Good.
So I probably will order another two cases of Bibles.
Uh-huh. Very good.
And
we'll
have them in stock, and then that'll be it for a while. We're not sending them out real fast because we have to find people that actually qualify to get them. We're just not sending them out to everybody. Everybody won't use them properly.
Right, right. Yeah, so those prisoners who can't afford to buy a Bible, and that means most of them, but they want something better than a KJV, we will send them the scriptures.
Oh, they'll get a free KJV Bible at the chapel.
Uh-huh, right.
It's just, they give you free KJV Bibles, just like they give you free toilet paper, okay? And
yes.
That's an apt comparison.
Mm-hmm.
But these scriptures are Sacred Name Bible, and they've got almost all the corrections in them. Not all.
Mm-hmm.
Only my work's got that done.
Yes.
But I have not done the New Testament, and I'm not going to do the New Testament because the scripture is clear enough that I just don't need to do that work. I've got too much other stuff to do.
Yes, very good, very good. Okay, so today we're going to continue with our series on the history of Herod. And let's see, what episode is this going to be? This is episode 16, and we're in chapter 16 of Antiquities of Judah by...
We're in book 16, chapter 8.
Chapter 8. Very good.
God, okay. That's very confusing, the way they have this made.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little tough even for us to decipher upon occasion.
Right. Well, it's a huge book. It's almost as big as the Bible itself.
Oh, it's a massive book. Well, it's more than one book. It's a compilation of books.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now you have the wars, the Israelite wars, and the antiquities and all the rest of it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just straight history.
That's right.
You know?
And very accurate, very accurate, very little
He has to fudge a little bit on some of the comments so he doesn't have his head lopped off.
Right.
you can work around that. I mean, you got to be practical.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. So, inclusive of the antiquities and the wars, the antiquities of Judah and the wars of Judah, there is an extract on Josephus' discourse on the Greeks concerning Hades. the various appendices, the table of the ancient weights and measures. I mean, this is a gold mine of biblical information into the New Testament, because he wrote right after the life of Christ, and it's 760 pages or so, almost as thick as the Bible. All right, so it's well worth it. If you haven't read or get a copy of this, and you can get it online, so you can read it online in bits and pieces if you would like.
If okay. you have a big enough computer to download it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Oh, my Commodore 64 wouldn't hold it.
No. Here's with all the references. There's 1,143 pages.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. A lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot. That's a huge book. Okay. All right, folks. So let's continue. This is part 16 of the history of Herod, according to Josephus. Why don't you take it, book 16, chapter 8, over to you.
All right. This is section 1. But still the affairs of Herod's family were no better, but perpetually more troublesome. Now, this incident happened, which arose from no decent occasion, but proceeded so far as to bring great difficulties upon him. There were certain eunuchs which the king had, and on account of their beauty was very fond of them. Stay there. And, well, this guy was an Edomite pervert.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah, just like the Rothschilds, right?
Well, and the care of bringing him drink was entrusted to one of them. Like Joseph was a cupbearer, remember that?
Right, exactly.
Of bringing him his supper to another, and of putting him to bed to the third, who also managed the principal affairs of the government.
Wait, what? The guy who puts him to bed managed the principal affairs of the government? Really?
That's right. And there was one told the king that these eunuchs were corrupted by Alexander, the king's son, with great sums of money. And when they were asked whether Alexander had had criminal sexual intercourse with them.
Wait a minute.
You heard me. I'm not mentioning words. This is what it says here. Criminal sexual intercourse with them.
Wow.
They confessed it.
Wait a minute. Because my version says criminal conversation.
No.
It does not say sexual intercourse. It says conversation.
Sexual intercourse.
Okay.
I have this edition.
Amazing how different versions can be. Wow.
All right.
Back to you.
They confessed it, but said they knew of no further mischief of his against his father.
Okay. Well, you can see this is the family of Herod. There's so much infighting, rumor mongering, and backstabbing going on.
Well, remember at the time of Christ, the daughter, his wife's daughter, he was tapping her.
Right.
I mean, they just, anything that's available, they were hammering. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, continuing on. But when they were more severely tortured and were in the utmost extremity, and the tormentors, out of compliance with Antipater, stretched the rack to the very utmost, they said that Alexander bore great ill will and innate hatred to his father. And that he told them that Herod despaired to live much longer, and that in order to cover his great age, he colored his hair black and tried to conceal what would reveal how old he was, but that if he would apply himself to him, when he should attain the kingdom, that's what he's telling this eunuch.
Right.
Which, in spite of his father, could come to no one else. He should quickly have the first place in that kingdom under him. For that, he was now ready to take the kingdom, not only as his birthright, but by the preparations he had made for obtaining it, because a great many of the rulers and a great many of his friends were of his side. And those no ill men neither, ready both to do and to suffer whatever should come on that account. Section 2, over to you.
So the king's son and the guy who made his bed every night, they're the two principal people vying for the kingdom, for being the king. This is crazy stuff, folks. You can't make this up.
Well, is it any different with these readers? Who was in the White House and had a tranny wife?
Right.
Right. Yeah, and it's different. That's different, right?
And they had two rent-a-daughters living with them in the Black House. Yeah,
there
it was crazy, right?
Nothing new under the sun.
If anything, this is a parable of what happens when Jews rule. They destroy themselves with their infighting, and they ultimately self-destruct. So, but we can't just stand around and watch this happen. We got to prepare ourselves for the bitter end, for the worst, because that's coming, folks. All right, section 2. When Herod heard this confession, he was all over anger and fear, some parts seeming to him reproachful, and some made him suspicious of dangers that attended him, insomuch that on both accounts he was provoked, whether by fear or by anger, he didn't know which, okay, worry, and bitterly afraid lest some more heavy plot was laid against him than he should be able to escape from. So he's imagining things. He's getting delirious.
He's paranoid.
Paranoid, absolutely. Whereupon, he did not now make an open search, but sent about spies to watch such as he suspected. For he now was overrun with suspicion and hatred against all about him. Okay. So is this what happens when you become the king of a country? Or leader of a country?
I guess. Well, I mean, you know, some kings only have one noid.
Yeah, right.
But he had a paranoid.
That's right. And indulging abundance of those suspicions in order to his preservation, he continued to suspect those that were guiltless. Well, I suppose if you killed everybody in the kingdom, then nobody could take your place. Nor did he set any bounds to himself. But supposing that those who stayed with him had the most power to hurt him, they were to him very frightful. And for those that did not use to come to him, it seemed enough to name them, to make them suspected. And he thought himself safer when they were destroyed. So he's killing people left and right, or banishing people left and right, just on mere suspicion. And at last his domestics were come to that pass, that being in no way secure of escaping themselves, they fell to accusing one another, and imagining that he who first accused another was most likely to save himself. Yet, when any had overthrown others, they were hated, and they were thought to suffer justly, who unjustly accused others, and they only thereby prevented their own accusation. Nay, they now executed their own private enmities by this means, and when they were caught, they were punished in the same way. Thus, these men contrived to make use of this opportunity as an instrument and a snare against their enemies, yet when they tried it, were themselves caught also in the same snare which they laid for others. And the king soon repented of what he had done, because he had no clear evidence of the guilt of those whom he had slain. And yet, what was still more severe in him, he did not make use of his repentance in order of leaving off doing the like again, but in order to inflict the same punishment upon their accusers. So, man, he has gone absolutely bonkers with fear, rage, and paranoia. Amazing.
Yeah, this is hilarious. Yeah. Honestly, you know, the palace intrigue. Man, he's whacking all his servants.
Right.
It's going to be hard to find help.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Herod, you know, would you like to come work at the palace? Heck no!
Right. Well, what are the
get
Jews?
Killed.
What are the Jews doing today? They're whacking all of these reporters that are paid by them. If they tell a little bit of the truth, they're gone. Right. They're killing all these scientists. They're killing the people who run the kingdom because they question their loyalty. It's the same thing happening today, folks. The Jewish world order is crumbling slowly but surely. Over to you.
Well, they're following the DNA patterns, and they're going insane, just like this guy here. I mean, it's the same bloodline.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you got to understand that they are chasing after power. Their entire existence is to chase after power, conniving, cheating, stealing, whacking people. And so finally, when they do get power, they can't change their ways, and so their ways become self-destructive. It's insane, but this is what it is. Back to you.
Well, there's that old joke. Just because I'm paranoid, it doesn't mean they're really not out to get me.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, how do you save yourself in this atmosphere? Impossible.
I don't know, man. It's a house of cards. It's crumbling. Well, the house of cards is crumbling today.
Amen.
Hooray, hooray, hooray.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Section 3. And in this state of disorder were the affairs of the palace. And he had already told many of his friends directly that they ought not to appear before him or come into the palace. And the reason of this injunction was that when they were there, he had less freedom of acting or a greater restraint on himself on their account.
He's afraid they'd be spies. He's afraid they'd be spies.
Well, they would be witnesses.
Right.
Okay. For at this time, it was that he expelled Andromachus and Gamellus, men who had of old been his friends, and had been very useful to him in the affairs of his kingdom, had been of advantage to his family by their mediations and counsels, and had been tutors to his sons, and had in a manner the first degree of freedom with him. He expelled Andromachus, because his son Demetrius was a companion to Alexander.
A friend of his son. Wow. A crime.
And Gamellus, because he knew that he wished him well, which arose from his having been with him in his youth when he was at school and absent at Rome. These he expelled out of his palace and was willing enough to have done worse to them, but that he might not seem to take such liberty against men of so great reputation. He contented himself with depriving them of their dignity.
He escaped.
And of their power to hinder his wicked proceedings.
Wow.
Section 4. Wow. Read some more.
And you see that the people observing all this happening in the palace, they've got to be thinking, my God, this guy has gone absolutely crazy, and nobody,
right.
And nobody is safe. Okay, section 4. Now it was that Antipater, who was the cause of all of this, who, when he knew what a mad and licentious way of acting his father was in, and well, here it says licentious, so apparently your translation is correct, sexual intercourse, not just conversation. and had been a great while one of his counselors, he hurried him on, and then thought he should bring him to do somewhat to purpose, when everyone that could oppose him was taken away. When therefore Andromachus and his friends were driven away, and had no discourse nor freedom with the king any longer, the king in the first place examined by torture all whom he thought to be faithful to Alexander, whether they knew of any of his attempts against him. But these died without having anything to say to that matter, which made the king more zealous after discoveries. Sounds like the Inquisition. They just kill them all. When he could not find out what evil proceedings he suspected, they're guilty whether they say anything or not. As for Antipater, he was very sagacious to raise a calumny against those that were really innocent, as if their denial was only their constancy and fidelity to Alexander, and thereupon provoked Herod to discover by the torture of great numbers what attempts were still concealed. Now there was a certain person among the many that was tortured, who said he knew that the young man had often said that when he was commended as a tall man in his body and a skillful marksman, and that in his other commendable exercises he exceeded all men, these qualifications given to him by nature, though good in themselves, were not advantageous to him, because his father was grieved at them and envied him for them. Okay, so Herod was even envious of the appearance of his son. And when he walked along with his father, he endeavored to depress and shorten himself that he might not appear too tall. Well, Herod should have bought a couple of platform boots. And that when he shot at anything he was hunting, when his father was by, he missed the mark on purpose. For he knew how ambitious his father was of being superior in such exercises. So when
he was just a major suck up.
Oh, yeah. Well, he had to be. Otherwise, you know, he had to be chopped off. So when the man was tormented about this saying and had ease given to his body after it, he added that he had his brother Aristobulus for his assistance and contrived to lie in wait for their father as they were hunting and kill him. So you see, the jealousy and vanity of Herod is beyond all reason, okay? Jealous of his own son for being prettier than he is, right? And taller than he is. And then he believes every contrivance, every lie people tell, and then he whacks them. And when they had done so, yeah, this is...
Look here, this isn't a lie. Read on.
Yeah. And when they had done so to fly to Rome and desire to have the kingdom given them, there were also letters of the young man found written to his brother, wherein he complained that his father did not act justly in giving Antipater a country, whose yearly revenues amounted to 1,000 talents. Upon these
200.
Right. Well, okay. Mine says 10. Upon these confessions, Herod presently thought he had somewhat to depend on, in his own opinion, as to his suspicion about his sons. So he took up Alexander and bound him. Okay, so all these rumors are flying. Instead of training Alexander up to be his heir, okay, he just engages in believing all of these rumors and deals badly with everybody. Okay, all right, so let's continue. Yet did he still continue to be uneasy and was not quite satisfied of the truth of what he had heard. Okay, am I doing the right thing to Alexander, or have people deceived me? You can imagine the whirlwind in his mind. And when he came to recollect himself, he found that they had only made juvenile complaints and contentions, and that it was an incredible thing that when his son should have slain him, he should openly go to Rome to beg the kingdom. So this is what Herod is suspecting, that his son Alexander is going to kill him and go to Rome to take his place. So he was desirous to have some super surer mark of his son's wickedness, and was very solicitous about it, that he might not appear to have condemned him to be put into prison too rashly. So he's still got scruples. He's still, as Jews are, really always conscious of PR, right? They're always conscious of PR. So mm-hmm. he tortured the principal of Alexander's friends and put not a few of them to death without getting any of the things out of them he suspected. And while Herod was very busy about this matter and the palace was full of terror and trouble, this is like the revolution, the French Revolution, 1789. Everybody's in fear of being whacked. One of the younger sort, when he was in the utmost agony, confessed that Alexander had sent to his friends at Rome and desired that he might be quickly invited thither by Caesar and that he could discover a plot against him, that Mithridates, the king of Parthia, was joined in friendship with his father against the Romans, and that he had a poisonous potion already prepared at Ascalon. So here's another rumor. There's no way that the king of the Parthians would make a league with Herod the Edomite. But yet...
Well, you see, that these people are being tortured, and they're going to say anything, make up any tale, just to stop that torture.
That's right. That's right.
So...
This is why you don't want to get put in jail by the Jews, right?
You don't want to get in jail, put in jail by anybody, because they'll beat you to half to death in jail or beat you to death.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, all these rogues out there.
Stay out of jail, folks. Although the German prisons seem to be more civil.
Well, that's Germany. I'm talking about here, man.
Right.
This this place is out of control.
Right. And their corporations.
They got all kinds of cops beating up on people on the internet. They show all these videos where this guy goes around and videos the cops.
Mm-hmm.
And they are vicious.
Yeah. And it's not just blacks they beat up. It's white. In fact,
no,
more white people get beat
it's
up
everybody.
Than blacks.
Everybody.
Yeah.
White people, Mexicans, anybody, little old ladies,
other cops,
little old men. They pulled that 80-year-old man out of the car and slammed him into the car and beat him down. 80 some years old.
Yeah.
And he was a passenger.
Right. Yeah.
Man, yeah. I mean, it's
he must have been telling the driver how to drive. Incredible. Well, yeah, our society is out of whack.
That's what happened to me. Mm-hmm. I ran into a bad one.
Yeah.
And homie, don't play that.
Right?
Well, you know.
Yeah.
You pull a gun on me, I'm gonna pull a bigger one.
Yeah. There you go.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. Not now. Not now, though. I don't have any guns.
Mm-hmm.
No.
That's right.
Of course not.
Okay.
Section 5. To these accusations, Herod gave credit and enjoyed hereby, in his miserable case, some sort of consolation, in excuse of his rashness, as flattering himself with finding things in so bad a condition, but as for the poisonous portion, which he labored to find, he could find none. As for Alexander, he was very desirous to aggravate the vast misfortunes he was under, so he pretended not to deny the accusations, but punished the rashness of his father with a greater crime of his own.
Mm.
And perhaps he was willing to make his father ashamed of his easy belief of such slanders.
Yeah. Wow.
He aimed especially, if he could gain belief to his story, to plague him and his whole kingdom. For he wrote 4 letters and sent them to him that he did not need to torture any more persons. For he had plotted against him, and that he had had for his partners Pheroras and the most faithful of his friends, and that Salome came in to him by night, and that she lay with him whether he would or not.
Wow. Man, talk about a juicy letter.
Juicy, smell it.
There you go.
And that all men were come to be of one mind to make away with him as soon as they could. He's increasing his paranoia. what
he's
doing.
That's right. Deliberately, yeah.
And so get clear of the continual fear they were in from him. Among these were accused Ptolemy and Sapinius, who were the most faithful friends to the king. Mm-hmm. And what more can be said but that those who before were the most intimate friends were become wild beasts to one another, as if a certain madness had fallen upon them.
Yeah, fear.
While there was no room for defense or refutation, in order to the discovery of the truth, but all were at random doomed to destruction. Mm-hmm. So that some lamented those that were in prison, and some that were put to death, and others lamented that they were in expectation of the same miseries. And a melancholy solitude rendered the kingdom deformed, and quite the reverse to that happy state it was formerly in. Herod's own life was also entirely disturbed, because he could trust nobody. He was sorely punished by the expectation of further misery. For he often fancied in his imagination that his son had fallen upon him or stood by him with a sword in his hand. And thus was his mind day and night intent upon this thing, and revolved it over and over, no otherwise than if he were under a distraction. And this was the sad condition Herod was now in.
Okay. Section 5 is a perfect description of the Soviet Union.
Yes.
Where everybody...
They were all plotting against one another.
Right. And ultimately Stalin whacked all the Jews he thought were not loyal to him and replaced them with Jews that were loyal to him, who ultimately turned against him also, and they finally whacked him in 1953. This is what happens when you allow Jews to run a country. It is total paranoia, the state of terror.
Well, like
terror.
Trotsky.
They
came up behind Trotsky and buried an ice axe in his head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he deserved it, too. And the difference between Trotsky and Stalin was that Trotsky was also a Zionist. He was a Zionist communist, where Stalin distrusted the Zionists, okay? But they still needed Stalin to make sure that Russia could not get out of their grip. You know, communism is a Jewish invention, after all. Okay, so ultimately they had to whack Stalin so they could get total control.
Well, President Rosenfeld was a drinking buddy of Stalin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they plotted together.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. 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 Roosevelt opened economic concourse with the Soviet Union when it was about to collapse, and permitted Western investment into Russia at that time. That saved
Russia. Well, these American Jews were the founders of the Bolsheviks over there. They went to Russia and started Bolshevism.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So Stalin was a loose cannon for a while, and that's why they had to get rid of him. But when they got rid of him, it was totally under Jewish control yet again. Total. 100%.
Well, Lenin took a good turn over there, too.
Yeah, he died of syphilis.
Yeah, right? Well, that's fine.
The terror and all the Jewish executioners, fearmongers, executioners, I mean, they're all just like
Herod. They were the higher-ups in the KGB.
That's right. They were the executioners. Rivers of blood flowed in the execution chambers. And the Polish officers that were executed by Stalin... You know, 6,000 Polish officers shot in the back of the head at Katyn Forest. Unbelievable. It's a slaughterhouse. Communism is a slaughterhouse, a Jewish slaughterhouse. All right, number 6. But when Archelaus, king of Cappadocia, heard that the state of Herod was in, and being in great distress about his daughter and the young man, her husband, and grieving with Herod as with a man that was his friend, on account of so great a disturbance as he was under, He came to Jerusalem on purpose to compose their differences. All right, so Archelaus, the neighboring king, sees and hears about what's going on. He says, uh-oh, you know, my daughter's in trouble. You know, anybody around Herod is getting whacked. I gotta see about my daughter. And when he found Herod in such a temper, he thought it wholly unseasonable to reprove him or to pretend that he had done anything rashly, for that he should thereby naturally bring him to dispute the point with him, and by still more and more apologizing for himself to be the more irritated. He went therefore another way to work in order to correct the former misfortunes, and appeared angry at the young man, and had said that Herod had been so very mild a man that he had not acted a rash part at all. Okay, so, well, how do you deal with a madman? You pretend to be on his side. And so that's what Archelaus is doing. He also said he would dissolve his daughter's marriage with Alexander, nor could in injustice spare his own daughter if she were conscious of anything and did not inform Herod of it. Well, what would Herod think of this? Let's find out. When Archelaus appeared to be of this temper and otherwise than Herod expected or imagined, and for the main took Herod's part and was angry on his account, the king abated of his harshness and took occasion from his appearing to have acted justly hitherto, to come by degrees to put on the affection of a father, and was on both sides to be pitied. So Herod was apparently appeased by this posturing of Archelaus. Okay, Archelaus had no choice but to engage in this posturing. For when some persons refuted the calumnies that were laid on the young man, he was thrown into a passion. But when Archelaus joined in the accusation, he was dissolved into tears and sorrow after an affectionate manner. Oh, no. Accordingly, he desired that he would not dissolve his son's marriage. Who is this, Archelaus? This is what Archelaus wanted. You know, because you could see Herod's crazy. And became not so angry as before for his offenses. So when Archelaus had brought him to a more moderate temper, he transferred the calumnies upon his friends and said it must be owing to them that so young a man, who is prettier than his father, and one unacquainted with malice, was corrupted. And he supposed that there was more reason to suspect the brother than the son, upon which Herod was very much displeased at Phararis, who indeed now had no one that could make a reconciliation between him and his brother. So when he saw that Archelaus had the greatest power with Herod, he betook himself to him in the habit of a mourner, and like one that had all the signs upon him of an undone man. Yeah, well, he's now standing accused between two kings. Upon this, Archelaus did not overlook the intercession he had made to him, nor yet did he undertake to change the king's disposition towards him immediately. And he said that it was better for him to come himself to the king and confess himself the occasion of all, that this would make the king's anger not to be extravagant towards him, and that he then would be present to assist him. When he had persuaded him to this, he gained his point with both of them, and the calumnies raised against the young man were, beyond all expectation, wiped off. That's good. Well, so far, Archelaus, his intervention is working for
the
time.
He's playing this guy.
Yes.
Like a master violinist.
Oh, yeah, Archelaus. But Archelaus is only doing all this because he sees that Herod is unreasonable, can't be dealt with.
Yeah, he's bonkers.
Oh, yeah. And Archelaus, as soon as he had made the reconciliation, went then away to Cappadocia, having proved at this juncture of time the most acceptable person to Herod in the world. On which account he gave him the richest presents as tokens of his respects to him, and being on other occasions magnanimous, he esteemed him one of his dearest friends. But Archelaus' daughter is still in big trouble. He also made an agreement with him that he would go to Rome because he had written to Caesar about these affairs. So they went together as far as Antioch, and there Herod made a reconciliation between Archelaus and Titus, the president of Syria, who had been greatly at variance, and so returned back to Judea. So Archelaus calmed things down for a bit. That's where it stands.
He used a little reverse psychology.
Outstanding, and it worked for the time being. Yeah, right. Okay, brother, go to chapter 9, please.
Here we are in chapter 9. This is concerning the revolt of the Trachonites and how Sylleus accused Herod before Caesar, and how Herod, when Caesar was angry at him, resolved to send Nicolaus to Rome. Section 1. When Herod had been at Rome and was come back again, a war arose between him and the Arabians on the occasion following. The inhabitants of Trachonitis, after Caesar had taken the country away from the Zenodorus and added it to Herod, had not now power to rob, but were forced to plow the land and to live quietly, which was a thing they did not like.
The robbers now have to work. Wow. Horrible. Yeah. So it's horrible.
Man. And when they did take that pains, the ground did not produce much fruit for them.
They were Edomites. Yeah. Right.
However, at the first, the king would not permit them to rob, and so they abstained from that unjust way of living upon their neighbors, which procured Herod a great reputation for his care. But when he was sailing to Rome, it was at that time when he went to accuse his son Alexander and to commit Antipater to Caesar's protection, the Trachonites spread a report as if he were dead.
Oh, my goodness.
And revolted from his dominion, because it was revolting.
Mm-hmm.
And he took themselves again to their accustomed ways of robbing their neighbors. Oh, boy.
Highwaymen. Neighbor. Right, yes.
At which time, the king's commander subdued them during his absence. But about 40 of the principal robbers, being terrified by those that had been taken, left the country and retired into Arabia. Sylleus, entertaining them after he had been refused marriage with Salome, and gave them a place of strength in which they dwelt. So they overran not only Judea, but all Colle, Syria, and carried off the plunder, while Sylleus afforded them places of protection and quietness during their wicked practices.
Sounds like Mexico. They were
raiding
mm-hmm.
elsewhere, and this guy was mad at Herod anyway because he wouldn't let Salome marry him. So he let these guys rob out of his bailiwick.
Right.
Okay. Boy.
Yeah. Nothing but trouble.
What a tangled web we weave. Mm-hmm. But when Herod came back from Rome, he perceived that his dominions had greatly suffered by them. And since he could not reach the robbers themselves because of the secure retreat they had in that country, and which the Arabian government afforded them, and yet being very uneasy at the injuries they had done him, he went all over Trachonitis and killed their relations.
Got their families. That's what Trump did. Right?
Yep.
Okay.
Whereupon these robbers were more angry than before, it being a law among them to be avenged on the murderers of their relations by all possible means.
Gypsies.
Jihad.
Right, gypsies.
Jihad, yep. Anybody?
There you go.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they continued to tear and rend everything under Herod's dominion with impunity. Then did he speak about these robberies to Saturninus and Voluminous and required that they should be punished. upon which occasion they still the more confirmed themselves in their robberies and became more numerous and made very great disturbances, laying waste the countries and villages that belonged to Herod's kingdom, mm-hmm. and killing those men whom they caught, until these unjust proceedings came to be like a real war.
Yeah.
For the robbers were now become about 1,000, at which Herod was sore displeased and required the robbers as well as the money which he had lent Obodas.
MS-13?
By
border wars?
By Sylleus, which was 60 talents. And since the time of payment was now past, he desired to have it paid him. But Sylleus, who had laid Obodas aside and managed all by himself, denied that the robbers were in Arabia and put off the payment of the money, about which there was a hearing before Saturninus and Volumnius, who were then the presidents of Syria. And it has... these joint presidents of Syria, Saturninus and Volumnius, were not perhaps of equal authority, but the latter like a procurator under the former.
Okay.
As the very learned Norris and Pagi, and with them Dr. Hudson, determined.
Okay.
That's a footnote. Yeah.
Yeah.
At last he, by their means, agreed that within 30 days' time Herod should be paid his money and that each of them should deliver up the other subjects reciprocally.
Whoa. Ooh.
Now, as to Herod, there was not one of the other subjects found in his kingdom, either as doing any injustice or on any other account, but it was proved that the Arabians had the robbers among them. Mm-hmm. Section 2.
Yeah. So Rome is getting involved on Herod's behalf, and so this puts the fear of God, or the fear of Rome, into the Arabians. Section 2. When the day appointed for payment of the money was passed, without Sylleus's performing any part of his agreement, and he was gone to Rome, Herod demanded the payment of the money, and that the robbers that were in Arabia should be delivered up. And by the permission of Saturninus and Volumnius, executed the judgment himself upon those that were refractory. He took an army that he had and led it into Arabia, and in 3 days' time marched 7 mansiones. What does your copy say? M-A-N-S-I-O-N-E-S, mansiones, whatever that means. And when he came to the garrison wherein the robbers were, he made an assault upon them and took them all and demolished the place which was called Raepta, but did no
harm. It says 7 and in 3 days' time marched 7 days' march.
Oh, okay. So, all right. So 3 days' march. Okay, very good. But as the Arabians came to their assistance under Nakab, their captain, there ensued a battle wherein a few of Herod's soldiers and Nekeb, the captain of the Arabians, and about 20 of his soldiers fell, while the rest betook themselves to flight. So when he had brought these to punishment, he placed 3,000 Idumeans, Idumeans, folks, in Trachonitis.
Edomites.
Yeah, Edomites, in Trachonitis, and thereby restrained the robbers that were there. But, of course, since all Idumeans are also robbers and relatives of Herod, he figured...
Well,
he
they were approved robbers.
Right, approved
the robbers. Unapproved robbers got robbed
there,
by the approved robbers.
There you go.
Okay.
Just like Stalin. He also sent an account to the captains that were about Phoenicia and demonstrated that he had done nothing but what he ought to do in punishing the refractory Arabians, which... upon exact inquiry, they found to be no more than what was true. Okay, so they're a bunch of robbers, you know, terrorizing the countryside, and Herod had to do something about it, and he did. Back to you.
Brother Abair asked, does anybody know just about the time period these events were taking place?
Okay. I would think this was just before the days of Christ. Just before, right? Because we're getting near to Herod's death. So
right.
maybe 10 BC at the latest, earliest, 5 BC, something like that. Oh, okay. So born, okay, that's the...
Just life. A second.
Okay. Yeah, this would be very, getting very close
up.
To Herod's death.
This is the interval of 12 years.
And Yahshua was born in the very last year of Herod's life, or, yeah, the very last full year of Herod's life, because he had made an attempt on the life of Yahshua when he was yet a child, yet a babe, okay? So there is a bit of overlap there. Yeah, this is where Herod is going totally bonkers, and he's not going to live much longer. So maybe 10 BC at the earliest?
Something like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
However, this is section 3. However, messengers were hurried away to Sylleus, to Rome, and informed him what had been done, and, as is usual, exaggerated everything.
Can anybody tell the truth around here? Does it always have to be exaggerated? Okay.
Fake news. Yeah, fake right. news. Everybody hates you.
Right?
That's because you are a Jew. Fake news.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sylleus had already insinuated himself into the knowledge of Caesar and was then about the palace. And as soon as he heard of these things, he changed his clothing into black and went in and told Caesar that Arabia was afflicted with war and that all his kingdom was in great confusion upon Herod's laying it waste with his army.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's all Herod's fault.
Right. Well, Herod had acted without consulting Rome.
Well,
that's not a good deal. That's not a good idea. Back to you. Yeah.
And he said with tears in his eyes,
yeah,
that 2,500 of the principal men among the Arabians had been destroyed.
They're taxpayers. Taxpayers, right?
And that their captain, Nasibus, his familiar friend and kinsman, was killed. And that the riches that were at Rapta were carried off. And that Obodas was despised, whose infirm state of body rendered him unfit for war, on which account neither he nor the Arabian army were present. Boy, they're laying on thick here.
Yeah.
Laying it on. When Sylleus said so, and
this
added
is like CNN reporting, right? Yep.
And added invidiously that he would not himself have come out of the country unless he had believed that Caesar would have provided that they should all have peace one with another, and that had he been there, he would have taken care that the war should not have been to Herod's advantage. Caesar was provoked when this was said and asked no more than this one question. Both of Herod's friends that were there, and of his own friends who were come from Syria, whether Herod had led an army there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when they were forced to confess so much, Caesar, without staying to hear for what reason he did it and how it was done, grew very angry and wrote to Herod sharply.
He started a war without Rome's permission. That was, crazy. Stupid.
Mm-hmm. The sum of his epistle was this, that whereas of old he had used him as his friend, he should now use him as his subject.
Ooh.
Situation changed.
Okay, yeah, downgraded. Derek got downgraded.
He got a demerit.
A demotion, absolutely.
Sylleus also wrote an account of this to the Arabians, who were so elevated with it that they neither delivered up the robbers that had fled to them, nor paid the money that was due.
So Herod
they retained
wasted his
those
time.
Pastures. They retained those pastors also, which they had hired, and kept them without paying their rent.
This is like the mob in New York City.
Because all this, because the king of the Judeans was now in a low condition.
Right. Oh, man.
By reason of Caesar's anger at him.
I wish we had a Caesar today.
They hear that he's in trouble, and they're piling it on.
Yeah. Augustus Caesar, where are you when we need you? You put these Jews in their place, please. Back to you.
Those of Trachonitis also made use of this opportunity and rose up against the Idumean garrison. And followed the same way of robbing with the Arabians.
What did I tell you?
Who had pillaged their country and were more rigid in their unjust proceedings. Not only in order to get by it, but by way of revenge. This is getting deep. I love it.
Yeah, right. So now the Edomites and the Arabians.
Let's hear some more.
The Edomites and the Arabians are going at each other. I mean, who's worse? Well, obviously, it's the Edomites. You know, Clan Fedrin puts Edomitish chutzpah. That's what's driving these Edomites. So you could see that the kingdom of Edom, or Idumea, as the Greeks called it, was still in existence at this time. Herod was one of them. Yeah. And, the vast majority of Judeo-Christian commentators and the Jews themselves like to pretend that this was not a separate nation, that it didn't exist anymore. The hell it
did. Where do they think Yehuda Ishkarioth came from?
That's not
Iscariot. It's Ishkarioth.
Yeah.
Kerioth, a man of Kerioth.
Right.
Which is on the border of Idumea.
Amen.
He was the devil that betrayed the Christ.
Yes.
He had to have him among the 12 in order to get the betrayal done so he could die for our sins. Somebody had to betray him.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Josephus will get into the exact time of Herod's death and the coming of Messiah. He will get into that. But there he has to be very careful not to reveal his belief that Yahshua is the coming Messiah, God of Israel. You know, he has to be very careful what he says here. But here we see that the Idumeans, the vast majority of them were probably still living in Idumea. And it was only the Pharisees and their henchmen and Herod and Herod's family who were in Judea, in Judah proper, running the show.
Well, they had their merchants all over the place,
too. Oh, yeah, and the merchants, yes, for sure. But the lower class of Idumeans still stayed behind in Idumea. There wasn't really that much they could do, so they stayed there. And that's where Judas Iscariot came from. All right, section 4. Now Herod was forced to bear all this, that confidence of his being quite gone with which Caesar's favor used to inspire him. For Caesar would not admit so much as an embassage from him to make an apology for him. And when they came again, he sent them away without success. So he was cast into sadness and fear. And Sylleus's circumstances grieved him exceedingly, who was now believed by Caesar and was present at Rome. Nay, sometimes aspiring higher. Now it came to pass that Obodas was dead, and Aeneas, whose name was Aretas, footnote, this Aretas was now become so established a name for the kings of Arabia at Petra and Damascus, that when the crown came to this Aeneas, he changed his name to Aretas. Okay, so this was a popular name among the Arabians. Took the government for Sylleus, endeavored by calumnies to get him turned out of his principality, that he might himself take it. So there's still unrest between the Arabians, with which design he gave much money to the courtiers and promised much money to Caesar. Now it goes back to who can bribe Caesar more, who indeed was angry that Aretas had not sent to him first before he took the kingdom. Yet did Aeneas send an epistle to Caesar and a crown of gold of the weight of many talents. Now that epistle accused Sylleus as having been a wicked servant and having killed Obodas by poison. Wow. How is Caesar supposed to make sense of all of these accusations? You can see that Augustus is getting angrier and angrier with all of these backstabbing rulers of the country. And that while he was alive, he had governed him as he pleased. And he had also debauched the wives of the Arabians and had borrowed money in order to obtain the dominion for himself. Yet did not Caesar give heed to these accusations, but sent his ambassadors back without receiving any of his presents. Ooh, that's not a good sign for Aretas.
That's a rebuff.
Ooh, boy.
Right there,
oh,
buddy.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But in the meantime, the affairs of Judea and Arabia became worse and worse, partly because of the anarchy they were under, and partly because, bad as they were, nobody had power to govern them. For of the two kings, the one was not yet confirmed in his kingdom, and so had not authority sufficient to restrain the evildoers. And as for Herod, Caesar was immediately angry at him for having avenged himself, and so he was compelled to bear all the injuries that were offered him. At length, when he saw no end of the mischief which surrounded him, he resolved to send ambassadors to Rome again and see whether his friends had prevailed to mitigate Caesar and to address themselves to Caesar himself. And the ambassador he sent thither was Nicolaus of Damascus. Okay, so Herod has no choice but to keep on pestering Caesar, Augustus Caesar, to forgive him. That's the only hope he has. Back to you.
Oh, boy. That ends Chapter 9, sports fans. And let's see what we got on time. Oh, we got a lot of time. We got a half an hour, just about. We can get into Chapter 10 here. This is going to be Section 1 of Chapter 10. How Eurycles falsely accused Herod's sons, and how their father bound them and wrote to Caesar about them, of Sylleus, and how he was accused by Nicolaus.
Okay, accusers for hire. This is what's going on here, folks.
Rats are us.
Oh, there we go.
Let me get a hit of this coffee. It's
okay.
Still warm.
Yeah. But by the way, folks, this is politics today in America, Europe, Australia, New Zealand. It's all these backstabbers positioning themselves for power, all of them being bribed by the Jews.
You've got to see this
mm-hmm.
in modern day times. This is just a parallel, the same kind of skullduggery and intrigue and betrayal is going on today. Same
That's
deal.
Right. That's right. And
different.
The Republicans are just as bad as the Democrats, with maybe one or two
exceptions.
You
got the Republicrats and the Democrians.
Right.
Okay. Section 1. The disorders about Herod's family and children about this time grew much worse. For it now appeared certain, nor was it unforeseen beforehand, that fortune threatened the greatest and most insupportable misfortunes possible to his kingdom. Its process and augmentation at this time arose on the occasion following. 1. Eurycles, a Lacedaemonian, a person of note there, but a man of perverse mind.
Oh, no, not another one.
And so cunning in his ways of voluptuousness and flattery as to indulge both, and yet seem to indulge neither of them.
A con artist.
A master deceiver.
Yeah, a con artist, par excellence.
Came in his travels to Herod and made him presents. But so that he received more presents from him. He also took such proper seasons for insinuating himself into his friendship that he became one of the most intimate of the king's friends.
For the time being.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He had his lodging in Antipater's house, But he had not only access, but free conversation with Alexander, as pretending to him that he was in great favor with Archelaus, the king of Cappadocia. Thus, he pretended much respect to Glaphyra, and in a surreptitious manner cultivated a friendship with them all, but always attending to what was said and done, that he might be furnished with slanders
to please them all.
In other words, he's going to make up lies for each individual.
Now, Glaphyra is Archelaus's daughter, and Archelaus is fearing for her life because of Herod's paranoid schizophrenia, right? And so this guy comes along, and he's going to make it worse. Back to you.
Oh, I'm your good buddy, baby.
Yes, I can imagine what his intentions are for her.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in short, he behaved himself so to everybody in this conversation, and as to appear to be his particular friend. He was schmoozing with them all.
There you go. Schmoozing.
And he made others believe that his being anywhere was for that person's advantage.
Flattering everybody.
So he won upon Alexander, who was but young, and persuaded him that he might open his grievances to him with assurances and with nobody else.
Oh boy.
You can tell all to me.
You can trust me. Mm. Mm-hmm.
So he declared his grief to him, how his father was alienated from him. He related to him also the affairs of his mother and of Antipater, that he had driven them from their proper dignity and had the power over everything himself, that no part of this was tolerable, since his father was already come to hate them. And he added that he would neither admit them to his table nor to his conversation. Such were the complaints, as was but natural, of Alexander about the things that troubled him. And these discourses Eurycles carried to Antipater, and told him he did not inform him of this on his own account, but that by being overcome by his kindness, the great importance of the thing obliged him to do it.
Right.
You're just so nice to me. Yeah, I just got to tell you this.
I'm doing this out of compassion for you.
Well, I'm
not
your
to
good buddy.
You.
Listen to this. Mm-hmm. And he warned him to have a care of Alexander, for that what he said was spoken with vehemence, and that in consequence of what he said, he would certainly kill him with his own hand. Whereupon Antipater, thinking him to be his friend by this advice, gave him presents upon all occasions, and at length persuaded him to inform Herod of what he had heard.
Oh no.
So, when he related to the king Alexander's ill temper, as discovered by the words he had heard him speak, of course he didn't hear him,
right,
he was easily believed by him, and he thereby brought the king to that pass, turning him about by his words and irritating him until he increased his hatred to him and made him implacable, which he showed at that very time. For he immediately gave Eurycles a present of 50 talents, that was a lot of money, who, when he had gotten them, went to Archelaus, king of Cappadocia, and commended Alexander before him, and told him that he had been many ways of advantage to him in making a reconciliation between him and his father.
Wow. Man, this guy's lying to everybody.
Listen to this. So, he got money from him also.
And went away. Oh, my goodness.
And went away
Wow.
before his ruinous practices were found out. But when Eurycles was returned to Lacedaemon, he did not leave off doing mischief, and so, for his many acts of injustice, he was banished from his own country.
But he had lots of gold, so there. All his trickery was very profitable. Fascinating. What a story. All right, section two. But as for the king of the Judeans, he was not now in the temper he was in formerly towards Alexander and Aristobulus, when he had been content with the hearing of their calumnies, when others had told him of them. But he was now come to that pass as to hate them himself, and to urge men to speak against them, though he did not do it of themselves. Or they did not do it of themselves. So in other words, he's building up a case against them, and encouraging others to condemn his own sons so that he can do them in. He also observed all that was said and put questions and gave ear to everyone that would but speak of it, if they could but say anything against them. Till at length he heard that Eurytus of Cos was a conspirator with Alexander, which thing to Herod was the most agreeable and sweetest news imaginable. Okay, so he would have a total, how should I put it, witness against his own son. Back to you.
Boy, oh boy. Okay, section three. But still a greater misfortune came upon the young men. While the slanders against them were continually increased, and as a man may say, one would think it was everyone's endeavor to lay some grievous thing to their charge, which might appear to be for the king's preservation. There were two guards of Herod's body, who were in great esteem for their strength and height, Jucundus and Tyrannus. These men had been cast off by Herod, who was displeased at them, and these now used to ride along with Alexander. And for their skill in their exercises were in great esteem with him, and had some gold and other gifts bestowed on them.
Pay your bodyguards well.
Well, I mean, Herod blew them off. You know, I'm mad at you guys. You did something, and you're fired.
Yeah, Rosie
so they
O'Donnell.
They got to work for the boy.
Yeah, and Rosie O'Donnell pays her bodyguards well to carry guns, doesn't she?
she needs them.
Yeah, that's right.
Because she's disgusting. Now, the king, having an immediate suspicion of those men, had them tortured, who endured the torture courageously for a long time, but at last confessed that Alexander would have persuaded them to kill Herod when he was in pursuit of the wild beasts, that it might be said he fell from his horse and was run through with his own spear, for that he had once such a misfortune formerly. He fell off and got stuck in his own spear. Duh.
Right.
Okay. They also showed where there was money hidden in the stable underground, and these convicted the king's chief hunter that he had given the young men the royal hunting spears and weapons to Alexander's dependents at Alexander's commands.
Wow. Okay, here's where you can find some money, Herod. Oh, man. Oh, this is getting juicier by the minute. All right, section four. I think we have time for this.
We got just about 15 minutes.
Yeah, all these sections are short. Okay, section four. After these, the commander of the garrison of Alexandrium was caught and tortured, for he was accused to have promised to receive the young men into his fortress, and to supply them with that money of the king's which was laid up in that fortress. Yet did not he acknowledge anything of it himself. But his son came in and said it was so.
Mm-mm-mm.
And geez, wow. Son, what are you
but
doing?
But his son came ill, it says here.
Really? It's here. It says
that
in.
Doesn't sound. That does not sound right either to me.
I think came in makes more sense.
Yeah.
His son came in and said it was so, and delivered up the writing, which, so far as could be guessed, was in Alexander's hand. Its contents were these: quote, when we have finished. By God's help, this type is very small, folks, but both Steve and I are having trouble with it. By God's help, all that we have proposed to do, we will come to you. But do your endeavors as you have promised to receive us into your fortress. So it sounds like a sly operation here. Unquote.
This is like number 15 or 16 type, which is pretty small.
Yeah, it's really small.
Number 12 is standard.
Mm-hmm.
This is really tiny.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the book is so packed,
right?
They couldn't produce it any other way.
It'd be twice as thick, right? After this writing was produced, Herod had no doubt about the treacherous designs of his sons against him. But Alexander said that Diophantus, the scribe, had imitated his hand. Uh-oh. And that
forgery.
Forgery. Oh, just like the protocols, a forgery. And that the paper was maliciously drawn up by Antipater. Ugh. For Diophantus appeared to be very cunning in such practices. And as he was afterwards convicted of forging other papers, he was put to death for it.
That's sort of like Obama Llama Ding Dong's birth certificate.
There you go. Yep.
Okay. Section 5. So the king produced those that had been tortured before the multitude at Jericho in order to have them accuse the young men. These accusers, many of the people stoned to death. And when they were going to kill Alexander and Aristobulus likewise, the king would not permit them to do so, but restrained the multitude by the means of Ptolemy and Pheroras. However, the young men were put under a guard and kept in custody that nobody might come to them. And all that they did or said was watched, and the reproach and fear they were in was little or nothing different from those of condemned criminals. And one of them, who was Aristobulus, was so deeply affected that he brought Salome, who was his aunt, and his mother-in-law, to lament with him for his calamities, and to hate him who had suffered things to come to that pass, when he said to her, are you not in danger of destruction also? While the report goes that you had disclosed beforehand all our affairs to Sylleus, when you're in hopes of being married to him? But she immediately carried these words to her brother. Upon this, he was out of patience and gave command to bind him, and directed them both, now that they were kept separate from one of the other, to write down the ill things they had done against their father and bring the writings to him.
Okay, so in other words, each brother is supposed to condemn the other brother? And take that to Herod. Wow.
Well, that's like the cops do today. They'll get two schmoes that think did this crime.
Well, that's why they
separate the witnesses.
And they'll
have one in one room and one in the other room. Well, so-and-so said that you were involved in this and that you were the one that had the gun.
Mm-hmm. And he murdered.
We're going to charge you with
this. He pulled the trigger.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Right?
Well, why is he lying on me like that? I didn't have no gun. Mm-hmm. He was the one that had the gun.
Yeah, right.
And they go back and forth and they play them like a violin. Well, they're doing the same thing here.
That's
things
right.
Haven't changed in all these centuries, folks.
Nothing
haven't changed.
New.
They
under the dome. Back to you.
All right, this is section six. Or did I finish that?
No. So when this was carried out.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Number 324. So when this was directed them, they wrote this, that they had laid no treacherous designs nor made any preparations against their father, but that they had intended to fly away, and that by the distress they were in, their lives being now uncertain and tedious to them.
Wow. Interesting. So they separately said the same thing, that we're just in fear and we'd like to get the hell out of here. Thank you very much. Okay. Now that's believable, isn't it? Okay.
Yep.
Let's see how Herod deals with this. Section 6. About this time there came an ambassador out of Cappadocia from Archelaus, whose name was Melas. He was one of the principal rulers under him. So Herod, being desirous to show Archelaus' ill will to him, called for Alexander. Now, wait, I'm not getting this. So Herod, being desirous to show Archelaus' ill will to him, but Archelaus was of good humor toward Herod. Why would Herod want to do that?
Because he's nuts.
Because he's nuts. Okay, yeah, fair enough. Called for Alexander, as he was in his bonds, and asked him again concerning his flight, whither and how they had resolved to retire. Alexander replied to Archelaus, who had promised to send them away to Rome, but that they had no wicked or mischievous desires or designs against their father, and that nothing of that nature which their adversaries had charged upon them was true, and that their desire was that he might have examined Tyrannus and Jucundus more strictly, but that they had been suddenly slain by the means of Antipater, who put his own friends among the multitude for that purpose. So, remember, Alexander is married to Archelaus' daughter, and Archelaus would have, he's trying to save her from all this chaos. Verse 7, over to you.
Okay, this is section 7. I think this is going to be it for today.
Right.
We're coming right. We got about left 7 minutes. When this was said, Herod commanded that both Alexander and Melas should be carried to Glaphyra, Archelaus' daughter, and that she should be asked whether she did not know something of Alexander's treacherous designs against Herod. Now, as soon as they were come to her, and she saw Alexander in bonds, she beat her head, and in great dismay gave a deep and moving groan.
I'll bet.
The young man also fell into tears. This was so miserable a spectacle to those present that for a great while they were not able to say or do anything. But at length Ptolemy, who was ordered to bring Alexander, directed him to say whether his wife was conscious of his actions. He replied, "How is it possible that she, whom I love better than my own soul and by whom I have had children, should not know what I do?" Upon which she cried out that she knew of no wicked designs of his, but that yet, if her accusing herself falsely would tend to his preservation, she would confess it all.
Wow.
Alexander replied, "There is no such wickedness as those who ought the least of all to do so suspect, which either I have imagined or you know of, but this only, that we had resolved to retire to Archelaus, and from there to Rome." Mm-hmm. In other words, they were afraid they were going to get the heck
right
out because they didn't know what was going on with this crazy king.
Right.
Which she also confessed, upon which Herod, supposing that Archelaus' ill will to him was fully proved, sent a letter by Olympus and Volumnius and directed them as they sailed by to touch at Eleusa of Cilicia and give Archelaus the letter.
Wow.
And that when they had examined with him that he had had a hand in his son's treacherous design against Herod, They should sail from there to Rome.
Okay.
And that, in case they found Nicolaus had gained any ground and that Caesar was no longer displeased at him, he should give him his letters and the proofs which he had ready to show against the young men. As to Archelaus, he made his defense for himself that he had promised to receive the young men because it was both for their own and their father's advantage so to do. Fearing some overly severe action to be taken in that anger and disorder they were in on occasion of the present suspicions, but that still he had not promised to send them to Caesar, and that he had not promised anything else to the young men that could show any ill will to him.
So, the convoluted scenario that is Herod's life has resulted in he's making enemies of everybody around him.
Yeah, he's everybody. Going off everybody.
Right, yeah. He's a bound, a sure paranoid schizophrenic where he suspects everybody of everything and believes nobody. Except if they're telling lies. That's when he believes them. This is crazy stuff, folks. So Archelaus, his worst fears have come to pass, that his daughter, Glaphyra, is now caught up in this maelstrom of accusations, lies, treachery, and executions. So
she's in danger.
She's in total danger. And this is his motivation. He probably could care less about Herod's two sons. But if they wanted to be sent to Caesar, he'd be perfectly willing to oblige, right? Because they fear for their
own
lives.
Absolutely.
This is obviously he is being rational. He's the most rational person in this whole scenario. Can you imagine living in fear that your father kills you, wants to kill you, because he thinks you're plotting against him? Wow, yeah, what a life. Yeah, well, let's flash forward to today. All of the people that are doing the bidding of the Rothschilds, which includes the Freemasons, and all the actors in Hollywood, male and female both, if they don't do the bidding of the international bankster synagogue of Satan, they will lose everything they have.
Okay.
And yeah, this is how bad
okay,
it is.
Okay, flashback to Vince Foster.
Mm.
Hillary's little boy toy.
Yeah.
He got too close and found out too much, and they found him in that park, shot in the back of his head.
Right.
All the way in. How do you shoot yourself in the very back of your head?
I've been doing exercises.
That's really hard. And they
it
found that
really
gun
hard.
Laying next to him, and they ruled it a suicide.
Right.
But he had no reason to suicide.
No. No.
And it wasn't his gun. And the positioning of the entry wound was such that it was very improbable that it was self-inflicted.
Impossible. Yeah, and people have been known to shoot themselves in the back of the head with a shotgun, too, on behalf of Bill and Hillary. Folks, this is how bad it is today. It's really this bad. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. See you next time.
Too much fun. See you later.